Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
Welcome to this week's edition of Latin Waves. In the first half of our show, we cover the continuing Olympic resistance, both present and historic. On the second half of our show, we speak to Dr. Maria Paez Victor about the continuing military buildup in Latin America that is happening under the mainstream media radar and what threat this poses to progressive governments in the region. So stay tuned. I have Alicia Westergaard Thorpe on the line. Alicia is a spokesperson for the Anti-Olympic Resistance Network. Welcome to the show, Alicia.
Hello, thank you.
I've been watching a lot of TV news, and I don't see much in the way of negative stories. It's all positive, and people are partying, and it's bringing communities together. But the Olympic Resistance Network stands strong in their opposition to the Olympics. When negative stories do crop up, usually the protesters are criticized as being in a bad spirit or against the Games. So make your case. Why is it important for you folks to continue to protest these Games even while they're taking place?
Well, certainly what we hear a lot is that the protesters are anti-sport or anti-festival, right? As if somehow opposing the Olympics means you're against athletes personally, against sport in general, against the hopes of children, against kittens and puppies and rainbows. And that's really an oversimplification. The objection is certainly to the Olympics as an industry and on the impacts they impose on host cities. Certainly no one is opposed to sport, especially truly amateur sport, which certainly the corporatized Olympics are not. And there's many reasons to be opposed to the Olympic industry wherever it goes. Certainly, its relationship with property developers and exclusive corporate sponsors with reprehensible records, and the way it exploits the communities that it goes to. There's also the fascist history of the organization, certainly the torch relay that everybody gets behind with such spirit. I think most people don't recognize that it's an invention of the 1936 Berlin Games under the Nazi regime, designed as a way to promote Aryan youth and Aryan perfection throughout Europe. The path it actually took turned out to be a precursor to the path of invasion, so it was more of a fascist recon mission than a torch relay in the sense that we now think of it. So there's problems certainly with the Olympic industry everywhere it goes, and particularly in Vancouver, there are more direct concerns. Certainly a lot of people were promised an increase in affordable and social housing, permanent contribution to shelter beds. Those promises have been violated. In fact, nearly everywhere the Olympics goes, they promise to contribute to social housing, and rarely, if ever, are those contributions met, and they're certainly not going to be met in Vancouver's case. Instead of a permanent contribution to shelter spaces, they put up a temporary shelter available only during the Olympics, and they brought in the Assistance to Shelter Act called the Olympic Kidnapping Act so that the police would have the power during inclement weather to actually force the homeless to shelters. Now, knowing that there's not enough shelter space in Vancouver means that that's a handy way for the police to actually remove people to other towns and other communities. So the promises about housing certainly broken, as has been the case in most host cities, and the contribution to shelter beds violated. And this during a housing and poverty crisis. I think the fact that Vancouver is one of the most expensive places to live, and the few remaining communities that are affordable, such as the Downtown East Side and Strathcona, are being gentrified and pushing people out even farther away from the services that are located downtown. And that's one of the things that's accelerated with the Olympics is gentrification. They find communities that have affordable space for developers, usually spaces that people have been wanting to develop for a long time, and the Olympics gives them that capacity to move in and change the nature of a community and certainly raise the prices for people trying to live there. So gentrification, along with a betrayal of housing as a concern, certainly the fact that we're spending six, possibly as much as $9 billion of public funds to put into a sporting event that very few people can participate in. Most people watch on television, if anything. That's a really questionable use of public funds that could do so much for housing, that could do so much for healthcare, for education. And it's been shocking to see over the last few years how many cuts have been announced to social services and programming while at the same time we're spending money on the Olympics. They say these things aren't connected, but I find it curious that we can come up with at least $6 billion for the Olympics and we have to cut school programming, especially when they were doing so much boosterism in schools. They spent $500,000 on an Olympic programming for elementary schools at the same time as they cut a few $100,000 for sports programs in the schools. So it's obvious they're not even interested in furthering children's athleticism, getting people having healthier lifestyles, or encouraging kids to participate in group sports. They're really just interested in using them as a marketing opportunity to promote their mascots and promote all the products that are associated with the Olympics. So there's the questionable use of public funds, and additionally the questionable use of corporate funds and deals with corporations, such as the really questionable arrangement with developers that Vancouver got itself into, which required becoming both a borrower and a lender and lowering the city's credit rating. There's a lot of financial mismanagement related to the construction of Olympic facilities and a lot of really poor choices being made. We saw all the problems getting the RAV line done, basically because the city focuses on the Olympics. The goal of the city government, the province, the country, all becomes pulling off the games. They cease to pay attention to other social priorities. We don't even have parliament running, but we have the games running, and that's a really frightening choice that the government is making.
We've been talking a little bit about opportunity costs in the show. It's costing all this money, and what could we have done with that money if we chose not to have the games? Now, Tent City has been erected in the downtown east side. I understand these tent cities are a bit of a global movement. Tell us a little bit about what's happening down there.
Well, people have taken what was a wasted, vacant lot, empty space, and filled it with tents and shelters and a common space for people to come together. It's been going almost a week now. And the space, interestingly enough, is owned by Concord Pacific, which has been doing so much of the development in the area and is leased to Vanock for the duration of the games. And, of course, Vanock wasn't doing anything with it. It's sitting as an empty lot, and that space has been wasted for a long time. And so one of the things you find with the Olympics is the commercialization of public space, buildings downtown draped in advertisements, all the outdoor advertising dedicated to the games, restrictions in city hall bylaws on how people can use public space unless it's to promote the games. They even tried to restrict political signage during the entire span of the Olympics. So a lot of control is being exerted over public space, and that's where a lot of people have to live. That's somebody's community, and that's certainly all of our commons that we should be able to appreciate and being used for something positive. And I'd much rather see that space being used to house people, even if it's in tents, than for more hollow Olympic promotions. The fact that we've put together so many temporary buildings just during the Olympics, and we couldn't put together temporary housing. And I think the actions of people in the tent city shows just how easy and quickly we could take a lot of the public wasted space, half-developed buildings, empty buildings, vacant lots, and start using those to meet people's essential human needs, people that are sleeping on the street. I think it's just one of the many ways that people have chosen over the last few weeks to express themselves about the Olympics. and especially brave considering the massive policing presence, the 16,000 police, military, private security that have descended on the city, and all of their restrictions and control of on public mobility and public assembly. So it's a great statement to have people down there.
I was just on the streamsofjustice.org website, and you can actually see some great videos of really heartfelt videos of people telling their stories.
Canada is the only developed nation in the G8 that doesn't have a national housing strategy. We used to contribute annually to increase the housing stock and stopped decades ago for no conceivable reason, and it's a shame that Canada hasn't met the commitment. They've been talking for a long time about 1% of the budget to go to increase affordable housing. And we're not just talking about social housing here. We're talking about affordable housing, which is to recognize the fact that everybody is having trouble with the housing prices in Vancouver. People are having to live out in the suburbs and commute into work, and people are being pushed out of the center of town. So the 1% housing solution, I think this demonstration organized by the impact of the Olympics and the Communities Coalition and a number of other downtown housing groups, and just one of the many things that's wrong with the Olympics. I didn't have time to get into the environmental destruction. A lot of people have been active on that. The 100,000 trees cut down, the loss of habitat at Eagle Ridge and Callahan Valley, and other concerns people have with the corporate sponsors involved with the Olympics that are also funding the tar sands. So there's a lot of reasons of social justice concerns to be involved in opposing the Olympics. And what we hope is having brought all of these causes together around an issue like the Olympics that really encompasses so many political concerns, that we'll have an ongoing improved network in Vancouver to support each other's struggles and move forward after the games are gone.
You're quite right about that. I was listening to some of the boosterism reporting on, I'm not going to mention the station, one of the local stations, and one ominous thing that was said was, oh, there's going to be some really hard times after the games, and I thought, wonderful, 2 weeks, $9 billion, and then the people are going to pay for it on their backs, on their cut programs. Here at Latin Ways, we covered the shameful destruction of Eagle Ridge Bluffs and imprisonings of Harriet Nahani and Betty Croswick and others, and that was just a tragedy that we shouldn't let people forget. Thanks again.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
You too. I've been speaking to Alicia Westergaard-Thorpe. She's with the Olympic Resistance Network. For more information about the network, go to olympicresistance.net.
It never makes no sense. It never makes no sense. Fire, fire, fire. Light up your lighter. Fire, fire, fire. Armageddon is a deadly day. Armageddon is a deadly way. They're coming for you every day. While senators on a holiday. The army recruiters in the parking lot. Hustling the kids, they're juggling pot. Listen, young man, listen to my plan. Gonna make you money, gonna make you a man. Bam, bam. Here's what you get, an M16 and a Kevlar vest. You might come home with one less leg, but this thing will surely keep a bullet at your chest. So come on, come on, sign up, come on. This one's nothing like Vietnam, except for the bullets, except for the bombs, except for the youth that's gone. So we keep it on till you're coming home. Higher and higher. Fire, fire, fire. Light up your lighter. Fire, fire, fire. So we keep it on till you're coming home. Higher and higher. Fire, fire, fire. Light up your lighter. Fire, fire, fire. Yeah. Tell me, President, tell me if you will. How many people does a smart bomb kill? How many of them do you think we got? The general says we never miss a shot. And we never, ever, ever keep a body count. We're killing so efficiently we can't keep count. In the Afghan hills, the rebels still fighting. Opium fields keep on providing the best heroin that money can buy. And nobody knows where Osama been hiding. The press conferences keep on lying like we don't know. So we keep it on
transit line. The war for oil is a war for the beast. The war on terror is a war on peace. Telling you they're gonna protect you, and telling you if they support the troops, and don't let them fool you with their milk and honey. No, they only want your money. One step forwards and two step back. One step forward and two step back. Why the veterans get no respect? PTSD and a broken back. Take a look at where your money's gone. Seen. Take a look at what they spend it on. No excuses, no illusions. Light up your lighter, bring them home. So we keep it on.
You may have missed this on the mainstream media coverage, but on Friday, February 12, thousands of protesters at the Take Back the City Convergence protest forced the torch run to be rerouted 3 times. Olympic resistance didn't start with the games on Friday, February 12. In fact, the resistance has been building up over a few years. The next short interview is with eco-warrior Betty Croswick, who was at a rally outside Vancouver's courthouse downtown over the shameful imprisonment of Native elder Harriet Nahani. Harriet was ill and died shortly after her 10-day imprisonment in Surrey pretrial, which has been called a hellhole. Both Betty and Harriet and others were arrested trying to protect Eagle Ridge Bluff's pristine ecosystem that was later bulldozed to expand a highway up to the Whistler Games. I believe this event is what solidified many groups against the Games. I'll bring you that interview now.
Thanks for joining me, folks. I'm here down at Smythe Street at the downtown Vancouver at the courthouse, and I'm following up with Betty Croswick. She had, we were reporting on her last week. I'm here with her now, and I just want to ask Betty what's happening here tonight and why she's down here.
Well, it's a rather spontaneous gathering. It only started happening yesterday in terms of advising people that we need to come together to show our respect for Harriet. And her community has rallied, and they organized this, and so we're very happy to be here and be a part of this for Harriet, because I personally feel she has been grossly mistreated by the province of British Columbia. So grossly mistreated that I can hardly believe it, that they would send ill, elderly, a survivor of the residential schools to Surrey pretrial, which is a hellhole. I know Surrey pretrial. I have been there. And it's a terrible place. There's no fresh air. There's no air to breathe, really. You only get outside 1 hour in 24 hours. And the food is grossly deprived of nourishment. They don't have enough staff to adequately take care of the place, because Gordon Campbell has cut prison staff. So women are just locked down most of the time. And it's a receiving unit in the sense that so many women who come in are in various stages of drug withdrawal. A lot of them are very ill. The whole place needs to be abolished, and women sent to places where they might have a chance of actually improving their lives. Surrey pretrial needs to be abolished. It's just a really terrible place. And to send Harriet there, after I had written to the judge, I wrote Madam Justice Brown a letter before Harriet was tried and sentenced, and I advised Madam Justice Brown that Harriet was not well, that she had a very severe asthma, and that she had been struggling with the flu and trying to recover from the flu and was very weak. But in spite of that, the judge sentenced her to 14 days in jail, and she served 9 of it, Harriet did, in pretrial, yeah.
Now, if you remember, I'm here with Betty Folks. I remember a longtime activist against logging operations around British Columbia, out there fighting for all of us. Now, Harriet is a 71-year-old native grandmother, and very close with Betty, and we're here to show her support. As Betty was saying, she's in very serious condition at St. Paul's Hospital. Now, what are we hoping to accomplish here tonight with this little rally? I know prayers and support, but what do you see, if you could wave a wand and have one result come out of this gathering, what would it be?
It would be that this government recognized, number one, that they are racist in their dealings with Aboriginal people. They must be racist because they did not allow Harriet to, the judge did not allow her to stay really what her defense would be. The judge wouldn't even hear her. She not only didn't hear her defense, but she sent her to prison. I don't understand it. I really cannot understand it. It's something that might have happened, you know, 2 centuries ago, or might happen in some third world country, but to send a sick 70-year-old woman who's a survivor of a residential school to prison without even hearing her defense by saying that the court was not equipped to hear that defense is just outrageous. It's just absolutely outrageous.
Now, Harriet is 71 years old, and some people might say, well, she was breaking the law. Now, what do you say to those people that say she committed a crime and she had a fair hearing? And what do you say to those people?
Well, I say they're mistaken. She did not have a fair trial. She didn't have any kind of a trial at all. Harriet was out there at Eagle Ridge Bluffs because this is historically, traditionally Squamish territory. And Harriet has lived on the Squamish Reserve for 50 years. All of her children and her grandchildren are Squamish. She was up there protesting the destruction of Squamish lands that had been traded away through her own band. She was at odds with her band, who was allowing the destruction of Eagle Ridge.
We spoke greatly on your show last week about this process of injunctions, and I'm just once again here speaking with Betty, and we did read her transcript, and we spoke about the injustice of injunctions in the court system. Now, Betty, where do you go from here, and what do you think will happen to you on March 5th?
Oh, she's going to send me to prison for at least 9 months, maybe a year.
Thank you for listening to that archive footage. It was Betty Croswick. She was quite right. She was sentenced to 10 months in jail. She was not allowed to argue her case under a SLAPP injunction, which SLAPP injunction means citizen lawsuit against public participation. They used these against the civil rights movements in the 60s, and we're still bearing with them today. I'm going to play you a short clip. It was a riot scene at the courthouse after Betty was sentenced, and there was a sit-in. I just got some audio recording of a young protester, Jeremy, and just to catch the flavor and the severity of what was happening around us.
Here because we love Betty, because we love the earth
and justice,
our mother earth, and Betty is my hero.
We are starting a march. We're starting a march.
Well, I guess in response to this, we're going to have a little march around the building.
Right. Discuss. We're going to surround it. We're going to surround it.
Take the cars off.
We're going to go to room 212 and demand an answer as to why we weren't even allowed to show our respect for Betty inside the courtroom today.
Yeah.
This is for Betty. Give it up. We demand a public inquiry to the sentencing of Harriet Mahaney.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We believe that it's her time in prison.
Killed her.
That took her life.
Yeah.
She developed pneumonia, passed away far too early. These women and all the other protesters, they've already done their community service. They should be awarded. They should be rewarded for their time. This system is a sham!
Yeah!
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the court from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
You are listening to Latin Waves, a weekly syndicated program. For more information about our program, visit www.latinwavesmedia.com.